The producers of this film and the owners of this theater have been legally advised that you be informed that if you are easily hypnotizable or suggestion prone, be advised that you see this film at your own risk.
Now, Jeremy, you're getting very sleepy.
I usually am.
Oh, yeah. I don't even have to take that part into consideration, I guess.
Yeah, I'm already drowsy. I'm a fit subject.
Now watch as I swing this watch back and forth.
Actually, I have something for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I want you to go onto your browser and type in meatspin.com.
Is that still, does it still work?
I don't know. Take a look.
Nope, I accidentally typed meatpin.com. That's not going to work for sure.
I would like a meat pen, like a pen made of meat that I write with. Blood comes out of it. You probably get that on the Flesh Shopping Network.
So, the site's still there. But, there's a big icon over the loop that says click to unmute. And it doesn't work, as far as I can tell, on my browser.
But you're watching the man's meat spin.
Mostly, but there's a giant logo over it for the click to unmute thing.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's taking up, like, the center portion of the frame.
Yeah, I'm going to have to fix this.
All right, let me... Did it work for you?
Yes, you got... apparently through 20 spins... And I am very sleepy.
Okay. Okay. Oh, now it's working here.
Yeah, we can hear it.
Yeah.
We can all hear it. People at home have been listening to DOA's Right Round.
Yeah, I'm going to have to censor some of that.
Yeah. We can only use... We use too much of it.
Yeah.
For parody.
But yes, that meatspin.com.
Cease and desist from that guy with the eye patch. He sang for them. I don't know his name.
Yeah, I don't know about.
It's New Wave. You don't know nothing.
Yeah, I don't know much about New Wave.
I know. I do. You got the Buggles.
Okay.
You've got Talking Heads.
Yeah.
They're considered New Wave sometimes. Blondie.
Okay, yeah.
Talking Heads, The Cars, they're New Wave. I think they're like the New Wave band. Who else is in the New Wave? Adam and the Ants. ABC. Human League. Book of Love. Yaz or Yazoo, as they are sometimes called. Eddie and the Cruisers. Adam and the Ants again. And that's all the New Wave bands I can think of. Oh, Depeche Mode?
Yeah.
Duran Duran. How could I forget? By now, our listeners have been lulled into a deep state of trance.
Yes. They've been watching Meat Spin for hundreds of rotations now.
Just listening to me name off New Wave and new romantic groups of the 80s.
Like, Joy Division?
No, more post-punk.
Okay.
But New Order, who came out of Joy Division, you might call them New Wave.
Okay.
You know, I feel like they're kind of at the tail end of it, though. They were kind of, I don't know.
What about Gary Numan?
Yes, Gary Numan, the Tube Way Army, John Fox, Kestrel Maneuvers in the Dark is one. You've got King Crimson, kind of, for a little bit. They went new wave.
Kind of.
They did like a Talking Heads kind of album.
Yeah. Their run in the early 80s was kind of dabbled in that.
Some David Bowie, definitely on the new wave. There's Alice Cooper did a couple new wave songs.
Okay.
But we're not here to talk about that, are we?
I don't think so.
How much of this are you going to keep?
I don't know. We'll see. Probably too much.
Okay.
And yes, as we now have you under our trance.
Yeah. Deuced you into a trance.
A trance brought to you by the Raincoat Report.
Spandau Ballet.
With Boss here with Jeremy.
Hello.
And today we are talking to you not only about...
Kajagajagu is one. Oh. Two. Shy. Eye to eye. You know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kajagajagu.
Today we're here not only to tell you about Hypnosis, but of also Hypnorotica.
Yeah. The greatest and newest form of hypnosis. Actually, there is kind of like a moral panic around hypno-sissy porn going on. Have you heard any of this?
No. I mean, I know what you're talking about.
There was like an issue with it, like, you know, maybe like a year or so ago, like when Tucker Carlson, I think, was still on TV. I think he brought it up for some reason. There were some people kind of freaking out about it, like on the right, being like, oh, they're going to turn us into sissies and...
Yeah,
make us trans.
Tucker Carlson was upset because after watching 4 hours of sissy hypno porn, he started to feel like a sissy.
I think maybe the problem was that he just didn't feel like a sissy. He felt cheated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he really wanted it. But so just the other day on Twitter, Steve Hassan, who's like an ex-cult, he's like a cult researcher, like, cult deprogrammer kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
He was talking about the dangers of it. And I was like, perfect. I'd already picked this film like long before that, but it brought it back into public consciousness just in time.
We're on the cutting edge.
We are on the cutting edge for once. We're there. We've arrived. And so have you, listeners, to the Raincoat Report. I think we introduced ourselves already.
Yes, we did.
I love it. I love that I never know what's happening.
Well, what's happening this week is we are covering Hypnorotica from 1973 by Peter Savage.
Some people would call Huey Lewis and the News New Wave, but I don't think they fit.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think
so. I think that there might be just be people wanting to classify anything that had a synth in the 80s as New Wave.
Yeah. They shouldn't do that. Because there's all kinds of music. And there's all kinds of pornography.
Yes. Like this one. That is kind of an anthology film of sorts. Taking us through the caseload of Dr. Lawrence, played by Peter Savage.
Uh-huh.
And we go through several of his patients and... the sexually charged case stories of each of them. And along the way, we get introduced to some familiar names, such as Andrea True.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was disco, though, and not new wave.
No, she was not. She was a disco queen.
Yes.
Sorry, I got caught up reading on Peter Savage. Go back to what you were saying.
Oh, okay. We have Tina Russell and Jason Russell. Darby Lloyd Raines, Helen Madigan. And Sandy Bernhardt, who is joined by Jamie Gillis, who plays Nancy's lover. To Sandy Bernhardt's Nancy.
Okay. Now, if IMDb is to be believed, Peter Savage, the man who directed this film, was also one of the writers of Raging Bull.
Oh, yes. I remember reading this now.
Yeah, I was very shocked. And I guess was in Taxi Driver.
And in Raging Bull. And in Bill Lustig's Vigilante.
Man, this guy's really like a hidden legend. I've really dug this one up out of the muck. This is the only adult film he did. Well, I guess so, maybe. He also has They Shall Overcome. And Sylvia's probably an adult film. It's also credited as Armand Peters.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, there's quite some...
Yeah, Mark Stevens is in that, yeah. Okay, she has a multiple promiscuous person. Okay, we're going to have to watch Sylvia. Okay, all right, sorry, we'll work on that.
But yeah, Mark Stevens, who you pointed out was in one of his other films, was also in this film.
Cast perfectly as a psycho Vietnam vet.
Yes, our second week in a row of psycho Vietnam vet action.
I've developed a theme by accident.
Yeah. So yeah, Hypnerotica. It's, you know, it's like a 70, 75 minute film or something. Yeah, and It's pretty brief, and you can tell it's in the earlier days of hardcore features. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like a white coder.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's kind of like a retro white coder, you know?
But it's trying a little less hard to be educational.
Right. He's...
It's more obviously salacious.
Yeah, like, he's educating you, but, like, all of his anecdotes and stuff are just, like, insane-sounding bullshit.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely kind of has that like feel to it, and it gives it kind of something, which we haven't covered many of those, so to me still that's kind of like a unique, like a kind of a novelty.
Yeah, for sure.
But he's definitely doing like a take on that and not doing it, you know, like in a direct way, which I like.
Yeah. So yeah, Hypnerotica, it's a hypnosis-filled erotic delight.
Excellent. It is.
Or at least oddity, if not a delight.
Yeah, I would say it's an oddity. but it certainly, it has like a fairly like unique theme that is apparently quite enduring, as I've noted already.
Yes.
Continuing down to this day. I wonder how deep this desire to be hypnotized sexually goes.
I don't know.
How far back that extends. At least to when they invented hypnosis.
Yeah, for sure.
But
that was the first thing they thought about when hypnosis became a thing.
Can you really invent hypnosis? I feel like it's something you might just kind of like figure out independently.
I mean, I was considering that invention. I don't mean that in the like patented sense.
They patented it. The guy who kind of patented it is G.H. Estabrooks.
Okay.
Who I think like helped the CIA do a lot of their hypnosis related stuff.
Oh.
I think I have some theories about what's going on with young Mark Stevens.
Okay. Well, we'll have to get to that.
We'll get to those. That takes up a bit of the latter part of the film.
Yes.
Yeah. Peter Savage. American icon. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
I would say so. He's wrote and been in some of the greatest American films, like Indeed. Vigilante.
Yeah.
And Hypnerotica.
We'll go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk a bit more about Hypnerotica.
All right.
I thought I knew you. I thought.
Minutes
left in the podcast.
No. Oingo Boingo.
Oingo Boingo. Oh yeah.
Devo.
Oh yeah.
Talking Heads again. The third time, I think. Now let's get on with the show.
Yeah, so Hypnerotica.
Actually, no, let me pause.
Okay, we're going to pause.
I'm going to throw it back. Got a tale to tell.
Okay.
I've been moving.
You have.
I've been moving
boxes.
You're going
to not live with your parents very soon.
Yeah, I've got 1 foot out the door. I'll be a real boy again. we're moving to this like kind of small place, like kind of out of town a little bit.
Yeah.
So it'll be a longer drive to get here, but it'll be okay because I'll probably just have to wake up earlier.
And you won't have Tim running in the room while you're trying to take notes.
Yeah, I won't have Tim yelling at me about God while I'm trying to take notes on such classics as Sorority Sweethearts.
Yes.
We're in an apartment complex. We don't got house money.
Right.
But our neighbor is like some, it's like a younger, like, black guy. I think the landlord said he'd been living there since he was like 10. It seems like he might have some kind of like, well, I've worked at the psych hospital long enough to like know, like, when I spot someone, if I can see if they're all there or not.
Yeah.
I don't think he's quite all there.
Fair enough.
Which is fine. His main thing seems to be that he just hangs out on the patio and just blasts cigarettes all day and just stares blankly.
Oh.
Which doesn't seem to be bothering anyone.
Yeah.
But I pulled up and was just kind of sitting in my car waiting for my partner and our other roommate to come along.
Right.
They pull up and our roommate gets out and she's trying to introduce herself to this guy because I don't think... She's from, like, a real small town, so...
Yeah.
She's trying to be neighborly, but it doesn't have the sense that I do. And she's like, hey, what's up? She's like, oh, your new neighbors are moving into this. And he just stares ahead at her blankly. And she, like, moves in closer. And he just continues. He's like, are you okay? And he just keeps staring at her blankly. And I'm watching all this from the car, and the entire time he's had his hands down his shorts. That's the gooner on the block.
Well, it seems like you're right at home.
Yeah, I'm in good hands. He's fine. It was just very funny to observe all that go down. I was like, this is just it's a clash of cultures.
Yeah. Well, Hypnerotica.
Yeah.
Is a different type of culture clash.
I suppose so.
I don't know. That was a
you
bad.
You did it. No, you got it.
We're going. So we open with some title cards that tell us the stories you are about to see are all true. Only the names have been changed. We wish to express our thanks and acknowledgement to Dr. Sidney A. Orens, medical doctor and hypnotist, for serving as technical advisor.
I meant to see if this guy exists, but I'm going to go ahead and say he doesn't.
Yes. So we then get a voiceover message that the producers and owners of this theater want to advise those in the theater that those easily hypnotized should be warned. We're then told that to best enjoy the film, we should relax. We get a close-up shot of a pair of eyes as the voiceover slowly talks us into relaxing deeper and deeper into sleep.
Man, that lore guy we don't like. He's also given this one a really bad review.
Then I woke up 3 days later naked in a Waffle House bathroom. Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, he's always writing bad reviews.
Just have fun.
He's not having fun watching this stuff.
There's always got to be that guy.
Sometimes he's the only guy. We have to challenge him.
We should fight him.
Yeah, he's probably like... he's like fucking 70 years old.
I bet the two of us could take him.
I bet we could break his little bones. I bet I could crush him into dust.
Like an ogre?
Yeah. Or a giant. I'll grind his bones to make my bread.
Oh, yeah.
Be he alive or be he dead. But he'll be dead after we grind him up.
Yes.
Into bread.
We then cut to a doctor's office where the doctor is hypnotizing a woman. This is Betty, played by Andrea True. His fake mustache and beard are hilarious. So yeah, this is Dr. Lawrence, and he's guiding Betty to go back deeper and deeper into her mind. Back to the story she was telling him about before he started hypnotizing her. We transition into Betty yelling at her husband. She's using some homophobic slurs and yelling at him for never doing anything.
Yes.
We're told in voiceover that Betty admitted she never loved her husband. She married because she was getting older and felt like she should settle down. We see Betty slap her husband, and then he starts to slap her around. He tells her, "Shut up, you cunt!" He slaps her around more, and then she seemingly gets turned on by this and starts to go down on her husband.
Yeah, they have a contentious relationship, I would say.
In voiceover, we're told Betty had numerous sexual affairs before marriage, but found none of them satisfying. She had tried everything her lovers had suggested, and decided that she must have been frigid. We're told that though she was a willing lover with her partner, she never liked kissing a man's privates, as she puts it. But now she could not get enough of it from her husband. Betty's husband fucks her mouth a bit before laying down and getting blown more. Her husband starts to go down on her, and Betty moans and thrashes and tells her husband that she loves him. The husband starts to fuck Betty missionary. We're told that deeper analysis revealed masochistic tendencies, which were traced back to her getting beaten by her father, often and severely.
Yes.
In her adult life, she craved a strong man who could handle her forcefully. We get close-up penetration shots of her husband's ass bouncing as he's giving it to her. We're told in spite of the strange moods and constant nagging, it had never occurred to his tender mind that his wife craved a sound beating now and then.
Well, you know, I think it's highly discouraged.
Yes.
To an extent, I don't know. My friend told me about the office Christmas party that he didn't go to, but apparently, like, some lady's husband just, like, punched her in the eye.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I was like, that's crazy. At the office Christmas party?
Right?
Goddamn.
With all those witnesses?
Yeah. I think they all kicked his ass, is what I heard.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's important that, I think that's important.
I think that's why we need to get rid of the police. Just yeah. Let the people deal out the justice.
Yeah. If someone sees it, they can beat you.
Yes.
Yeah. See something, beat something. You know?
We're told that on the occasion shown on screen, when he did lash out, she fell in love with him. But along with that came the fear that she might lose him. Fortunately, we're told, through regression and hypnotic suggestion, Betty's masochistic desires lost their hold on her.
So she was cured.
She was cured of her masochism.
So she doesn't want to get hit anymore, and he doesn't have to hit her.
I guess.
I guess that's good for him that he's not getting called the F slur just for, like,
yeah,
voicing his opinion.
Right.
I like that they call this distressed relations.
Yeah. Dr. Lawrence tells the camera that he can't go into the gamut of love requisites that were featured in that prior scene, just telling us that she was indicative of a problem, as is the case in the next scene, he says. So then we cut to a man and a young woman, Nancy, with the doctor. The man's yelling about how she was raised with love and religion, and he can't understand what went wrong with her. She tells him that there's nothing wrong with her. She's a girl, and she fell in love. The man screams at Nancy, "You're my younger sister," and she replies, "It was sudden. I can't help that." The man tells the doctor, "If he did this to her, I'll kill him." The doctor says that he put Nancy into a deep trance state and regressed her.
I'm not 100% sure why he put her into a trance state. It doesn't seem like they're just trying to figure out if he fucked this guy. It seems like...
Yeah, this is his only way of handling things.
Yeah.
He's a one-trick pony.
Yeah. He's like, you guys ever try hypnosis for that?
Yeah. We see Nancy walking the sidewalk, looking through some windows. And then old Jamie Gillis pops out of a topless bar and bumps into Nancy. We hear Nancy's voiceover that she doesn't know why that happened, But from the first time that she saw him, the world became a different place. He looked into her eyes and she no longer had control over her mind. She knew that she would do anything he asked of her.
Every time that they show Jamie Gillis, like, establishing him, there's just an ominous thundercrack that follows. Yeah.
We see Nancy walking towards Jamie before her brother grabs her and leads her away. Jamie smirks as he sees her getting dragged off. We see, apparently at another time, Nancy lurking outside the same storefronts. And Jamie runs into her again and says hi to her. Then we cut to them naked inside some apartment, standing across from each other as Jamie grabs her breasts and tweaks her nipples. Dr. Lawrence tells us, love at first sight is like a thunderbolt. Science has recorded amazing occurrences of this. In her voiceover, we hear Nancy say that she always thought sex was a further expression of love and desire, and it was even more that way with him. He knew how to take control, which made her more responsive. We see Jamie pull away Nancy's panties and finger her. Nancy tells us that this was her first sexual experience, and she didn't know everything that was involved. She adds that the first time that he made her kiss his member, it was so large that it frightened her.
Yes.
She didn't know how to do it, but as they continued to see each other, she looked forward to it more. We see Nancy sucking Jamie's cock and then him fucking her mouth. Nancy lays back. When he kissed my clitoris.
Clitoris.
Oh, yeah, my clitoris.
Yeah.
I became transfixed. Jamie goes down on Nancy a bit, and then we hear Nancy in the office saying, I won't give him up. I love him. I love him. She talks about her body stiffening and her mind soaring above everything mortal as we watch him suck and lick on her nipples in this flashback. She says he's fierce and rough in his lovemaking, and sometimes he gets carried away, and sometimes he hurts her a little. But she believes he needs to feel overpowering in his lovemaking. Then some, like, crooning music kicks in.
Yeah, there's, like, a couple scenes like this in the film where there's, like, oldies that are playing. Yeah.
We see Jamie fucking her doggy style, wedging a finger into her ass. He pounds her and slaps her ass a bit and eventually pulls out, stroking and coming on her ass.
One thing that I think starts in this scene and kind of recurs through most of the rest of them is, like, the camera does, like, a 45, like, degree turn, like, a lot in, like, almost every sex scene. I don't know if that's, like, an attempt to hypnotize us.
I don't know, maybe.
I'm not quite sure. It happens a lot. I don't like when films go upside down. I'll say that.
Dr. Lawrence tells us that Nancy's lover was obviously unworthy of Nancy's fixation. So through hypnotherapy, they applied a new set of values in Nancy's subconscious, and now she's ready to fall in love on more equal ground.
Yeah, he programmed her.
Yes.
He reprogrammed her. And now we're going to hear about a celebrity.
We're told if we have any doubts about Nancy's story that we shouldn't, as the thunderbolt of love at first sight can strike anyone. Dr. Lawrence picks up a framed photo on his desk of Katharine Hepburn.
He just has this here to, like, be able to tell this anecdote, I guess.
We're told Katharine Hepburn herself stepped out of a car in Europe and ran into the most handsome young man she ever saw. He smiled, and she immediately started following him as her friend yelled that she was due back. Her friend pulled her away, and they sped off, and the spell was broken. The thunderbolt, Dr. Lawrence says, and we cut to another scene. My name is John Smith, says
a man. My name is John Smith.
Yes.
This guy might have the most wooden acting in the film.
Yeah, probably.
And it's a tough race. I'm impotent, but only with my wife.
Yeah, so this man makes his way into Dr. Lawrence's office, and Dr. Lawrence asks him why he wants the doctor to hypnotize him. And John says that he thinks he has a deep-rooted issue. The doctor suggests that may be an issue for a psychiatrist, but John says he's laid on more couches than Fanny Hill.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Lawrence asks what the problem is, and John says that he's impotent, but just with his wife. Dr. Lawrence gets permission to hypnotize John and leads him through breathing deeply and relaxing. He has John close his eyes and extend his hands in front of him and talks him through his hands getting heavy and he can't hold them up. And then he tells John to relax and that he can hold his hands up now. He has John stare deeply in his eyes as the camera zooms into the doctor's eyes. He tells John his hands are stuck together, and then he tells them to relax and he can pull them apart. He continues to tell John to relax as he holds his head, and then he tells John to fall deeper and deeper into sleep, but that he could still hear him and respond to him. Dr. Lawrence gets John to admit that his name isn't John Smith. He starts to panic about his background and his family. Dr. Lawrence tells him to relax and tell him about his wife. John says she's beautiful, kind, and refined, and would do anything for him. So we cut to his wife, Tina Russell, getting out of the shower and toweling off as we hear Dr. Lawrence in narration, telling us that his patient's wife was just as he described, but his nights were filled with torment as shortly after they were married, he found himself unable to perform. So, to be clear, John is played by Jason Russell, Tina Russell's husband, who is playing her husband in this film as well.
This one's real.
Yes.
The other ones are all fictional, but this one's real.
Yes. We see John pacing and smoking as Tina walks into the room. Dr. Lawrence tells us that John had become panic-stricken, as he loved her, but his impotency drove him frantic. His wife, on the other hand, was understanding and tried to use anything she could to arouse him, but nothing seemed to work. We see Tina walk in and cradle John's head. She says that she didn't expect him to be home so soon. He tells her that she's beautiful, and she tells him that he is too. Tina offers to rub his shoulders to help him relax. She then suggests that he lays down so that she can make love to him. He's hesitant, but lays down as she continues to tell him to relax. Tina kisses John and caresses his body a bit, working her way down to his cock, which she begins to suck. After a moment, he tells her not to do that. She says that she doesn't mind, but he tells her that he doesn't want that from his wife. It's not decent, he says. Back in the office, we see John in his trance, panicked and saying, "I'm sure she suspects something. I don't want to lose her," and he starts to cry.
Yeah.
Dr. Lawrence asks what John meant when he said that he was impotent only with his wife. We cut to two naked ladies caressing each other on a couch. This is Darby Lloyd Raines and Cindy West.
Or, as our doctor calls them, hooker sluts and degenerates.
Yes. We're told that John had a self-hatred. His self-image was so poor that he was only able to perform with hookers. The lower he thought of his partners, the more aroused he got. As a child, we're told that he had an incestuous attraction to his mother, and he hated himself for this. We see John stroke his cock and join the ladies on the couch. We see one of the ladies squatting and riding on his face while the other sucks his cock.
Yeah.
Dr. Lawrence then walks onto screen.
Yeah, he does a Rod Serling and just kind of wanders into the scene.
Yes. He tells us that this is an illustration of the dual forces in our soul struggling for supremacy.
I guess it is.
We're told in voiceover, John came to hate his mother, but she was always kind to him, which made John feel even lower until he was only able to feel comfortable amongst the most depraved.
Yeah.
Through his piggish self-image, he was unable to feel worthy with his wife. We're told that a completed sex act with his wife would have been akin to having sex with his mother.
Yes, it sure would. And there's also satanic demons that rage in us all.
Oh, yeah.
That was another thing he was talking about. And he also says that he lives a piggish existence.
Yes.
Which is quite like me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You saw me. He's flopping around on your couch this morning.
Oh, yeah.
It was quite piggish.
We're then told by Dr. Lawrence that what John didn't know was that his wife was also under hypnosis. We cut to Tina naked in a bed alone. In voiceover, we're told that she found Dr. Lawrence's card in John's pocket. Tina had a high sex drive and was forced to satisfy herself, but felt guilty about this. Dr. Lawrence apparently told her that John was likely to respond to treatment, apparently for lack of doctor-patient confidentiality, and not to feel guilty about pleasuring herself, as this was a common practice amongst women. We're told that she shared a story that worried her, where she became fascinated by the phallic form of the cucumber.
Oh.
He told her that this was also normal, as women found themselves satisfied by many phallic symbols. We watch as Tina puts a condom on a cucumber and lubes it up, and then fucks herself with the cucumber as some, like, doo-woppy love song plays.
Uh-huh. Another one of those.
Dr. Lawrence tells us, through therapy, he was able to give John a new feeling of self-worth. We then cut to John naked, holding Tina's body up in the air, also naked, and then laying her down on the bed. On the bed, they make out, and John begins to play with Tina's clit as she rubs his arms. We then cut to Tina on top of John, blowing him as he eats her out from below in a 69 position. They continue this for a couple of minutes, and then we eventually kick into a marching band.
Yeah, I heard
or,
that.
Kick into marching band music.
Uh-huh.
As John erupts in a big load. We cut now to Jerry in Dr. Lawrence's office being hypnotized.
Does John Smith say something like, and now I'm the greatest?
Maybe.
I think when he's like, fucking, I think that's how we know.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's a real success story for him. But now we have Jerry?
Yeah, we cut to Jerry in Dr. Lawrence's office being hypnotized. Dr. Lawrence tells the camera that Jerry's been preconditioned to fall into hypnosis with the touch of the doctor's hand on his forehead. He tells us Jerry was overcome with the strong feeling to murder his sister's boyfriend. He tells us this was odd because he had liked the guy at first, until one night. We cut to Jerry walking into the bedroom where his sister and her boyfriend are making out. He's fingering her hard and they're flicking tongues against each other.
They're playing some music that sounds like you would hear in like an Italian restaurant?
Yes. Jerry's just standing there and watching as this happens. The sister sucks on the boyfriend's cock a bit. After a minute or two of this, she mounts the boyfriend reverse cowgirl. As this is going on, Jerry produces a large kitchen knife, which he uses to bob around menacingly in the hallway a bit before throwing it aside. The boyfriend pulls out and comes as the sister rubs his cock. Back to Dr. Lawrence's office, he tells Jerry when he snaps his fingers, Jerry will be awake and feel relieved. Dr. Lawrence snaps his fingers and tells Jerry that he might be feeling jealousy tied to an incestuous desire for his sister. Jerry responds angrily at the suggestion, but Dr. Lawrence immediately puts him back in a trance, interrupting his outburst.
Yeah, he'll sleep!
He tells him when he awakens, he will forget all about their discussion of incest and to bring his sister down to see the doctor as well. So then we cut to Jerry and his sister, now both in a trance in Dr. Lawrence's office.
You notice this guy thinks everything is incest?
Yes. In her trance, Jerry's sister says that he's usually so good, except when he's asleep. We cut away to Jerry's sister naked in bed reading a magazine. Jerry walks in also naked, but with his eyes closed. He climbs into bed, and Dr. Lawrence tells us that at first, she just pushed him away, knowing that Jerry would often sleepwalk, going as far as to complete chores in his sleep. He adds that this was the first time he attempted physical contact with her, and she just didn't know how to handle it. We see Jerry licking and sucking on her nipples and starting to finger her. Dr. Lawrence says it was here they discovered Jason's sister, named Paula here, was a slave to her family, and would do anything to satisfy their needs. Their wishes were her command. We cut to her stroking Jerry's cock and then sucking it, as we're told, sacrificing herself for her brother's happiness. Apparently, these nocturnal escapades continued, and she grew to enjoy them. We see them 69ing, and then Paula on her knees blowing Jerry. Then we see Jerry fucking Paula missionary, then her riding him cowgirl. We cut back to the office and see Jerry sweating in his trance. Dr. Lawrence addresses the camera. Sex. When will man finally understand this driving force in nature? We're told, through hypnotherapy, Jerry was relieved of his nocturnal activities without being told what he had done, and Paula was released from her family chains to enjoy her freedom with her own lover.
Well, that's good.
We then cut to a man walking into Dr. Lawrence's office.
Uh-oh.
This is the war vet, played by Mark Stevens.
Yes, and he looks shaken.
Dr. Lawrence's assistant tells Mark to wait, but he ignores her and asks if Dr. Lawrence is a medical doctor. He tells him no, and Mark says, shit, and Dr. Lawrence asks why it matters. Mark asks how he can know that Lawrence won't tell people what he tells him, and Dr. Lawrence says that he does have a code of ethics. Mark says, ah, bullshit.
Yeah, that's right. I would call bullshit, too.
Yes.
You can't just have a generic code of ethics.
Right. Dr. Lawrence suggests maybe a Catholic priest would be an option to unburden himself. Mark says he can't walk into a church, not after God's forsaken him.
Huh.
Dr. Lawrence suggests maybe he can act as God's instrument and offers him a drink. Mark looks around the office and sees a very obviously faked diploma with a completely different doctor's name on it.
It's just like the hotel I stayed at.
Yeah.
They did the same thing.
As they did on the Comfort Inn logo.
Yeah.
Dr. Lawrence pours the both of them some brown. A freeze frame reveals it's four roses.
I like that this doctor just offers his patients brown.
Yeah. They exchange bizarre glares for a minute or so here.
They're getting ready for a showdown on the psychic plane.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's good when your doctor offers you a little brown. I think it shows that they're pretty cool. They're chill, you know?
Yeah.
They're not one of those uptight doctors.
Mark says Dr. Lawrence seems like an okay guy. Dr. Lawrence starts to reply, and Mark interrupts, I want to kill every girl I screw!
Huh.
Dr. Lawrence replies, I see. And Mark assures him, no, you don't see. He says the feeling's becoming stronger. He adds that he just met a girl he's in love with, and he's afraid if he makes it with her, he'll kill her. Dr. Lawrence asks, have you ever killed a woman? And Mark says, a lot of them, and nom. Dr. Lawrence says that he wants to see if he can help him. He asks Mark if he thinks that he can help him, and Mark nods. Dr. Lawrence offers him his hand, and he shouts, sleep! Mark goes into a trance, and Dr. Lawrence tells us, it may be hard to believe, but instantaneous trance sleep is a fact of life.
Yes.
Especially with the military, who are dehumanized in order to follow orders without question.
Yes, and we're going to get into that.
Dr. Lawrence returns his attention to Mark and asks him to think back to Vietnam. We cut to a bunch of Vietnam stock footage.
Just a lot of actual footage.
Right.
A lot of death.
Yeah, a bunch of piles of bodies and shit.
Death and destruction. Absolutely insane for a pornographic film.
Yeah.
But, you know, it sets a tone.
It sure does.
He's just screaming, body count, kill, kill, kill.
Yeah, Dr. Lawrence asks where he is, and Mark says they're on a search and destroy mission. They were instructed to shoot any moving person, armed or not. We get some gruesome footage of soldiers firing their weapons and dragging dead bodies around. Mark is going on about how there were dead bodies everywhere. Kill, kill, a lot of geeks, but that's all brass wanted. Body count, kill, kill.
Yeah, I like that they don't use the right slur in this.
Yes.
I appreciate that. We can say it, I guess.
He says, I gave them my share, killed everything in sight. He says he heard something and sprayed half of his clip. He had his Zippo out, and he heard something. So we see him walk into a hut with his lighter, and there's a woman in a corner, cowering and screaming no. He yells at her, take it off. She continues to cower and cry as we hear gunshots and explosions.
Yeah, this is the only scene in the film without schmaltzy music.
Yes.
It just is the sounds of war going on constantly.
Eventually, Mark rushes forward and tears off the woman's clothes and pushes her to the floor before jamming his cock into her mouth and threatening to kill her as she struggles. He slaps her around a bit before pinning her to the ground and fucking her mouth a bit. He then slaps her more and mounts her missionary, fucking her to the sound of explosions. Mark continues to fuck her hard for a couple of minutes and then pulls out, coming as he grinds against her hip. We see her reach up and hold him close to her. Mark then gets up as there's shouts of, "We're moving out!" Mark redresses and points his gun at the woman. He hesitates and stares at her, before firing 3 rounds into her. We hear Mark yelling, "I killed her! I killed her! I didn't have to do it, but I killed her! They made me do it!" Dr. Lawrence tells him to go deeper and deeper into sleep. Dr. Lawrence tells him to let that scene fade away. He asks Mark to return to the present time. He asks him what's happening now. We see Mark fucking a woman played by Helen Madigan. He's fucking her missionary, and things seem to be going well. But as he's fucking her, he's starting to have flashbacks of the scene of him fucking the woman in Vietnam.
Yeah, I get a lot of like interposed shots of the two of them. And
also some helicopters flying by and explosions and fires.
Have you ever seen the Parallax View?
No.
Now, this is a fine political thriller. That movie basically revolves around Warren Beatty uncovering like a corporation that exists pretty much just to train like political assassins and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And he gets like access to like their facility and is like put through like the training, and the training montage is fairly similar to this, though that came out about a year later, where it's like images of like friendly stuff mixed with like images of like, you know, like bodies in Vietnam and things like that, like played over like patriotic music.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Meant to confuse the mind. And trained to kill.
Well, yeah, so the flashbacks continue and he envisions himself holding a rifle. We see him stand up and point his weapon at the girl in bed. He imagines himself firing in his flashback. Then we hear Mark in the office screaming, "I killed her! I killed her too!" Dr. Lawrence tells him again to go deeper and deeper into sleep. He then tells the camera that this was a most difficult case. The young man was suffering deep exhaustion. The one thing that the military owed this man was to rehumanize him before releasing him. The doctor adds, "A military dog is treated better." Readjusting to life without the praise of his military superiors, we're told he became overcome with feelings of supreme guilt. He's driven by the desire to be held accountable, to the point where he would kill in order to be punished for his murders. We're told that they were able to make some progress by restructuring his personality so that he blamed himself less for past deeds, and with post-hypnotic suggestion, now he's able to express love normally with his chosen one.
He's always just restructuring someone's personality.
Yeah.
That's
his go-to.
His treatment is to hypnotize you, and then he's just like, "This is too difficult. I'm just going to rebuild your personality."
Yeah.
Boss, have you ever heard of a little thing called the Phoenix Program?
No.
Okay. So what's going on with Mark Stevens here is I think that he was part of this.
Okay.
His character, at least. And the Phoenix Program was carried out in part by the Army, in part by the CIA in Vietnam in the late 60s to early 70s.
Okay.
And it was, I'll just read from Wikipedia. It was designed to identify and destroy the Viet Cong via infiltration, assassination, torture, capture, counterterrorism, and interrogation. Basically, it was just like a civilian assassination program where we turned soldiers into just kind of serial murderers.
Oh.
And then the war ends and they all come home.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, I think that's what happened to this guy. And there's a not entirely, I think, crazy theory that a lot of our serial killers kind of came out of this program. If you like look at like the height of activity being like in the mid 70s to like the 80s.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of strange coincidences. So did they do this? Did they not rehumanize him on purpose? Was he programmed to kill?
Perhaps.
Perhaps so. Much to think about, especially for a little shitty film from 1973. But thank you for letting me go on a little bit.
Well, unfortunately, we don't get much resolution to that. We just see Mark with his partner, played by Sandy Bernhardt. He's fucking her with her legs pinned up, slowly and passionately. He buries his face in her bush a bit as he caresses her breasts. We cut to Sandy sucking his cock, then to her stroking his cock as we get a slow-mo shot of him blowing his load all over himself. We're asked, how long will this last? Someday will he revert back to what he had been turned into? A killer?
Yes.
This all remains to be seen. We're told that hypnosis isn't a witch doctor's practice, and it's not a cure-all. Dr. Lawrence tells us, what he's tried to tell us is that it deserves a place in human affairs, and adds that there's very little danger. The camera zooms into his eyes and tells us, in order to avoid after effects, a hypnotist must clear his subject of any post-hypnotic suggestion. He tells us to relax and pay attention to the things he says. He tells us, as this ends, that we'll all be relaxed and happy, and to tell our friends to come see this film. We cut back to a blowjob as we're told that our friends will also relax and sleep. Deeper and deeper into sleep. Deep, comfortable sleep. We see more subjects from the film falling asleep during their sex acts.
Mm-hmm.
We hear more deeper and deeper asleep. And then the end. And that was our hypnotic journey for the day.
Wow. I feel completely at ease.
Yes.
I feel so relaxed.
You seem like you're going to fall asleep.
No, I don't.
And we'll be back here in a moment to give our final thoughts on Hypnotica.
There were dead bodies, burnt dead bodies all over. Killed. Body count. Body count. Killed. Hey, everybody was killing. That's all the fucking brass was interested in. Kill a lot of geeks. Kill a lot of geeks. So they get promoted. That's all they hassled with. Burn down every hooch. Body count. Body count. Kill. Kill. That's all we were hassled with. Well, I gave them my share. Killed everything in my sights.
I would like to gently slide into that good night. Like a runner making his way home. You know?
Yeah.
It's poetic. But I can't sleep. Not yet. Because no. It's time for...
The Raincoat Review.
Yes.
You like that one?
I love it.
You seemed upset. You rolled your eyes a lot.
I didn't roll my eyes.
You're always rolling your eyes. I think it's just a thing you do. You're just trying to... I think your glasses make it hard for you to see.
I don't know what's happening most of the time.
I know. Especially when I'm talking.
Yeah.
It's hard to follow most of my thoughts. That's okay. It's perfect for podcasting and perfect for...
The Raincoat Review.
You know, like the man said, I think everyone should see this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? This is certainly like a very... an oddity.
Yes.
In the world of hardcore pornography. I definitely enjoyed it on the level I would like any kind of exploitation film.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good, easy laughs in it. A lot of strange, absurd moments, particularly with our good doctor, Savage. I think it is it's not a very erotic film in any way I would describe. I like all the little... vignettes. They're all kind of crazy and memorable in their own way.
Right.
From the Jamie Gillis thunder cracks to little Jerry and his big knife. I'll always think of them fondly. But I gotta say, I think the centerpiece of the film is the final 30 minutes or so with Mark Stevens, which is, as I've talked about, made quite an impression on me.
Yeah.
Just like last week's film, I'm here for it. I like it. I like it a lot. This film overall, though, is it's definitely a product of its era. It's not particularly like well made, put together, kind of sloppy.
Yeah.
But I can't help loving it. I'm going to give it a good 3.5 stars.
Okay.
I really, it's quite short at about 70 minutes. I was not bored at all through the entire thing. I was, in fact, constantly delighted by what was shown to me. I'm not just saying that because I'm under hypnosis.
Fair enough.
That's good enough. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought Hypnerotica was fun to watch. Yeah, it's not very well made. Cinematography-wise, it's definitely kind of has those hallmarks of an early porn film where they haven't really figured out the best shots for these things.
No, they found one they like, and that's just kind of turning the camera on its side.
Yeah.
Which actually does work a bit better in the Vietnam scene because of like the chaos that's, I think, supposed to be kind of inherent to it.
Yeah.
But doesn't quite work in the other ones.
Right. So that was something.
Yeah. Yeah,
but overall, I just think that the pseudoscience of hypnosis being on full display here with very Freudian-focused psychology and everything else, there's a campy delight to the whole thing.
Yeah, it's got a very kind of... it's one of those things that hasn't, like, aged very well.
Yeah.
And we can just kind of look back at it and be like, those fools.
I think that similar to last week's episode, there's kind of at least one scene of sexual violence that feels unnecessary.
Sure.
I will say that I don't think that it's as much of a detriment in this film in the sense that just, like, I don't know. This film as a whole can't be taken seriously.
Right. It doesn't ever set itself up enough to, like, for you to ever, like, really buy its credibility or anything. Yeah.
So I guess it didn't bother me as much. But overall, I would give it 3 stars. I think it's definitely an interesting oddity. There's a lot to like here. But at the same time, it's very crude and...
Rude.
Not particularly erotic or well-made, but if you like just the silliness of exploitation films of the time, there's definitely something here for you.
There's definitely something to just dropping a ton of horribly gory Vietnam footage into the middle of your adult film.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure what it is. Like, I don't know what effect they hope to achieve. But it touched me deeply.
So, yeah, that's our episode this week.
Yeah.
Follow us on Instagram, maybe Twitter, at Raincoat Report. RaincoatReport@gmail.com.
Yeah.
If you need to email us, or Patreon.com/RaincoatReport if you want some bonus episodes. We covered the porn news last Friday, past and present. And
future.
Future.
I'll make a prediction.
Okay. I'm loving that.
You will love it. I know that.
But in the meantime, if you're going to your favorite hypnotist's office to treat your PTSD, don't forget your raincoat.
Yeah. That's perfect.
Let me assure you that in the hands of a competent practitioner, there is very little danger. However, for you or any hypnotized person to be free of any after effects, a hypnotist must clear a subject from any and all post-hypnotic suggestions. So just relax for a moment and pay strict attention to the things I say. Sleep. As this film fades out at the end, sleep. You will then all be fully awake, sleep. Feeling refreshed and happy. Sleep. And you will be eager to tell all your friends to come and see this very interesting film. And they will become one of the participants you are now about to see. Sleep. And they too will relax. Sleep. relax, and sleep deep.